Over the last 10 years, I've had the good fortune to do irrigation research, irrigation water requirements on around 30 native wildflowers, or what we call native forbs. And we have a comparison of five different species to talk about today. It's real common for everybody to have selfies today, so I thought I'd add one in here. And then Central Oregon, I had to take that picture. So we have a lot of deterioration of the biome in the Great Basin and a lot of interest in having greater amount of seed, the native seed, particularly forbs, for restoration. There's some grass seed production, but not much range plant seeds. And our objective at the experiment station was to look at irrigation practices that would help seed growers produce seed, and the seed ultimately would be used for restoration activities. The Great Basin is this very large area, includes most of Nevada, and clear up into our area of Oregon. It's a sagebrush steppe. It has a lot of pressure from invasive weeds, and the fire frequency and intensity are wiping out a lot of the native plants. So there's a great deal of interest in restoring these areas and finding ways to provide plant material that could be used. So if you remember the picture here of the Great Basin, this portion right there in Oregon, the southeast part of Oregon, are the two watersheds that come together, and the species that we've been testing are almost all from very close by in the sagebrush steppe around our area. Four of the five lomation or desert parsley species are from that area. And then the agricultural lands are all lands that have been converted from sagebrush steppe to agriculture. So the five species that we tested, these are all biscuit roots, and they're the really important plants for Native Americans, both for starchy food and medicine, and the leaves were used as vegetables. Plants are pretty edible. They support wildlife, and they're some of the first plants to come up in the spring, eaten by sage grouse and other birds. So it's a pretty important group of plants. Lomation dissectum, fernleaf biscuit root, is the number one plant. The roots are dug and sold for herbal medicine in the western United States. And it's used ostensibly to combat flu and common cold and some other virus problems. And then of these five species, the last one, the Sextus desert parsley, is considered a rare endangered plant, and so I included that, even though it's not immediately close to us, has a very high antiviral products in it. It's even been considered for HIV, except the fact that it's just so rare. It turns out that it's very easy to grow. So, what's wrong with our area to produce seed of these plants? Well, we have about 10 inches of rainfall, and you notice that the average rainfall is okay, maybe around an inch a month. But then, right when these plants are going to seed in June and July, there's practically no precipitation. And so for the plants to have a good seed year, they have to be fortuitous in having a more than normal rainfall in the early spring to carry it forward to produce seed. So irrigation would be very important for seed production. And so we thought, well, we're going to only apply a very small amount of water, as if it was a good rainfall year. So we're going to add 1 or 2 inches of water four times. So we had randomized complete block designs with four reps, three irrigation levels, 0, 1, and 2 inches applied for every 2 weeks. And so each of the species, we thought it would be really simple to start doing this work, but then we had a reality hit, and each one of the various 30-some species that we have really needs to have its water when it's going to flower and when it's going to seed, rather than just at some arbitrary time. And so anyway, water meters are installed to verify application, and neutron flow probes. So this is not one of the Lomations, but each plot had four rows. The center part of each plot was harvested for seed yield, and there was a drip tape applied, installed 1 foot deep between two rows. So there's two drip tapes per plot. And then every 30 feet down the field, it was cut up, and different amounts of water were applied. And what started as rather simple layout ended up becoming quite complex, as we needed to have different water meters and different controls for the different species at the time. And we used a regular grain drill, but we blocked off. We're trying to do everything we could mechanically so it could be simulated by a grower. What we found is that we're just planting two rows. It looks like we're planting six or seven, but we're just planting two rows 30 inches apart. The other rows are plugged off. And we're dropping the seed in the fall. With spring planting, simply didn't work. With fall planting, you get the natural cool, wet moisture, the cool, wet weather that vernalizes the seed. So this is what this is standing in the middle of the plots, looking uphill. You can turn around, look the opposite direction. So this plot here is a zero amount of irrigation each year. The plants are surviving. That's Gray's Lomation on the left. This is the nine-leaf biscuit root, and that's Fernleaf Desert Parsley on the far right. So Fernleaf Desert Parsley took two more years to develop before it started producing seed. The next plot up had 2 inches every 2 weeks, and then the next plot after that had one, and they're randomized up and down the field. So the years really varied a lot in terms of the amount of water. You can see that 2007 and 2008 were very dry during this February through June, July, August period, that makes a lot of difference for seed yield. And again, 2013 was very dry. Looking at the yield responses, the different species, you see that on average, the Gray's Lomation is maximizing yield at around 5 or 6 inches of applied water. But in a very wet year, like 2010, is not really so significant, and the distribution is skewed way to the left. But a dry year like 2008, the curve is closer to 6 or 8 inches of water applied. The 2007 was one of the very first years with seed yield, so plants are just starting. If we look at Triternatum, similar sort of pattern, but stronger peak a little further to the right on average. And Fernleaf biscuit root, really strong peaks to the right of 4 inches, 6 or 8 inches. We have data through 2015, at the present time. So in summary, we can see that Lomation dissectum, it took 4 years for those plants to develop and get seed yield, and they're still going strong. They're doing really well. Only needed about 5 inches of water to maximize seed yield. This is based on regression and a maximum where you get the first derivative. The first derivative is zero, then that would be the maximum seed yield. And needed full 8 inches in dry years. The Lomation, the Gray's Lomation, didn't have any response in really wet years, but needed 5 to 8 inches in the dry years. It came on with seed yield in 2 years, as did the Lomation triternatum. They were pretty similar in their responses. And the Lomation nudicali and Tsutiscus, they just haven't responded to added water. The seed yield has been pretty, not as high, but pretty stable, around 300 or 400 pounds of seed per acre, and haven't responded. So they're the most recent two species that we've added to our work. One of the problems with these species for seed growers is that you really have to wait quite a few years. So it's like almost establishing a berry crop or small tree crop, because there's a lot of investment and time waiting for the first seed yield, which is a problem, makes it more problematic for the BLM and Forest Service to contract seed production of these species. So if we look down through the conclusions, go clear to the bottom, really it's possible to get pretty good seed yield. The seed's pretty valuable, so having 1,000 pounds of seed yield is pretty good, and really don't need much water. The yield response is varied by species and varied by year. Really total only small amounts of irrigation water are required. So thank you very much. I think that we managed to drive everybody out of here. So yeah, go ahead.
So mine's just a technique question. So I'm not that familiar with neutron probes. Are they better than the dielectric probes or the standard ceramic tensiometer?
Well, in the first place, it's a question of range of data. And so the range of data that you can get with a neutron probe is very high, because you can go from very wet soil, which is typical in the spring, to very dry soil as the whole field bakes out. So you can actually get data. The dielectric sensors of all sorts that we've tested all have very high errors in the soils our station, because of the presence of calcium in the soil. And they tend to be relatively unreliable. They tend to be either a way off at the dry end or the wet end, depending on the model.
I bought $1,000 dielectric probe, and I wasn't that happy with the results.
Yeah, I've gotten good results with a few, but most of them I have not. But it depends on this. The dielectric probe, there's certain conditions where it's very good. Very uniform soil texture, very low calcium, you know.
Clay, I guess maybe would be good for the dielectric.
Yeah, maybe not. But it's a very sandy soil, like you saw in Florida, and very low calcium and very uniform texture. You know, you're going to get pretty good uniform data. What's your question?
I think time is complete.
Here, we'll go ahead and take his question anyway, because nobody's going anywhere.
That's true.
Go ahead.
My question is if there were any differences in quality between irrigation treatments and how
any differences in
quality in terms of germination.
Oh no. Yeah, very excellent question. But what we found was that if we planted in the fall, early enough in the fall, so that there was lots of little moisture events, we started drilling seed, you know, and doing all sorts of things, planting and sprinkling and all that kind of stuff, and we quit all that. We ended up planting, we scratched the soil, and the seed are planted superficially with just practically no cover, or with row cover, but not drilled, and not irrigated, and everything comes up. So when it comes along March or so, everything comes up long before we're irrigating anything. And then we're only irrigating at the time that the plants would produce flowers and grow to seed. So we're not irrigating during plant establishment at all.
But in terms of the that seed yield, if there were any differences between the treatments, for that harvested seed to then be germinated.
Oh, is there an effect on the seed quality? Good question. I can't answer it. Thank you.
Thank you.